Okay. So I gave a rather ambitious title. Or a hopeful title is more to the point. Because as most of you have realized, the area of cosmology is undergoing a very exciting time. Lots of new data is coming in, and mostly what is happening is that old data is getting more and more precise in a very rapid pace. And some of this excitement, since cosmology deals with gravity, is definitely flowing through the string community as well. And what I hope to explain to you that excitement is well deserved, and there is indeed some very good hope that cosmological data could indeed contain some signatures of string theory. Whether it in fact will is still a big question, but that it could seems certainly feasible. So cosmology actually contains, we live in a dynamical universe, and cosmology is the study of the dynamics of the universe as a whole. But it's not just the dynamics part. When you have a dynamical equation, you also need to supply some initial conditions, which is not always stated explicitly, but I would like to do so here, because this plays a very important role in what's going on. Particularly, of course, in our standard picture of cosmology with a hot Big Bang, there's lots of stuff that goes in the Big Bang that we don't know, which is part of the initial conditions story. So what is it? What are all these observables that people talk about? Well, of course, there's the expansion rate of the universe. And there are the element abundances, for which we have a very successful picture in standard Big Bang cosmology that explains the relative abundances of light elements. They're the relative densities of matter and radiation and dark matter. And then, in particular, there are two other things which will be the main point. There's the cosmic microwave background, which is a very uniform black body radiation at temperature T 2.72 Kelvin, which is very, very highly uniform. The anisotropies are of order 10 to the minus 5, and actually it's the anisotropies itself that are the most interesting part of this radiation. And then the second main observable is the properties of structure characteristics. And in a sort of, what you should think of here is simply the distribution of galaxies and galaxy clusters and etc., or the distribution of matter in the universe, which is the properties of this distribution follows, of course, from the dynamics of the universe as a whole. The properties of a galaxy or a cluster itself depend on local physics, but how they are distributed amongst the universe depends on the large-scale collection. Now, these are the two main measurements that come out of cosmology, and what is the most amazing part is that these cosmic microwave anisotropies, which are anisotropies in the temperature as people measure them, right? These are proportional, there's some transfer function T, to some small set of energy perturbations in the very, very early universe. And there's lots of physics which goes into this transfer function, which is well understood, where one can compute, given a sort of seed-like formation of small perturbations in the space-time, how the temperature variations of the CMB will look in an in the experiment. Now, what happens to this structure formation characteristics? So, if I look at the distribution of mass in the universe as a function of the whole mass distribution, there's some similar type of transfer function, which is has somewhat different physics in it, but it's also as well understood.
Is that invertible transformation?
I am not sure whether it's an invertible transformation. It's rather complicated. These transfer functions are just things that people compute with these large computer codes like CMB fast. And
so more precisely, is there a possibility that two different delta rho over rho give you the same delta t over t?
That is a very good question. To a rough extent, I would say I'm not an expert in this, but the sensitivity to delta rho over rho is rather marginal. Let me explain what I understand. So delta rho over rho is usually, and the point of course is that actually the delta rho over rho for these two different reasons is the same delta rho over rho. So this is usually give some function of the momentum. Okay, of the scale which you're measuring. This is the in Fourier space, this is just the spatial momenta. And there is a very nice ansatz, just came out of nowhere in standard cosmology, that you take the zeroth order power. This is the Harrison-Seldovich spectrum. I'm running a little bit ahead of myself to answer Kumut's question. But if you add a small correction to it, sort of a power law deviation, then actually all these results do not change very much if this power is not not too much if this power varies between sort of 1/2 and 1.5. So the sensitivity of these final results to changes in delta rho and rho is
sensitivity could be low. I'm more interested in the mathematical statement whether or not different functions in principle give the same or really is unique that you give it.
To that I don't know the answer. My guess actually would be if you limit to the domain of measurement that they would be. It seems this is all controlled by linear perturbation theory, which is usually invertible, and it's precisely limited to the regime of linear perturbation theory, which is going to be my next statement. The moment you go into the nonlinear regime, things become more difficult, and then I would expect that you would have trouble with invertibility.
What is rho?
So rho, actually, these are the fluctuations in the energy density, or actually the fluctuations there for ripples in space-time. They're really ripples in the spatial curvature. That's usually how they're expressed. So what you get at the end of the day is you get a picture of these power packs, power spectrum. And this is measured over a tremendous range. So this is usually plotted on a logarithmic scale, where in some units, it's over two full orders of magnitude that these measurements take place. And they're all predicted by the same power spectrum. And the shape, it roughly looks is as follows. So this is the combined power spectra, this dt over t plus this dm over m. This range is, roughly speaking, measured by the CMB.
Sorry, this is rho?
No, this is not d rho or rho. This is already multiplied by the transfer functions. And one of the sort of successes of cosmology is that if you take these transfer functions as is, and you take the same normalization on these sides, that you indeed get a power spectrum that precisely matches with two completely different measurements.
So what are the actors?
So this is the power spectrum. So actually, this first part is dt over t as measured. This second, you simply glue onto it the mass distributions, such as measured by galaxy surveys, either the Sloan Digital Sky Survey or there's the 2-degree survey. And then there's even a third component, which is also slightly overlapping, which is called Lyman alpha forced measurements. So it is in some sense one thing that the cosmologists mainly measure, but it's over a tremendous range of values. It's two orders of magnitude. So this is k. This is roughly speaking the size of If you take a spatial slice of your universe and you take a Fourier decomposition, these are the Fourier modes of that power spectrum. General relativity combined with sort of linear perturbation theory of fluid mechanics. That's the main item. And then you have various types of fluids in it. You have baryon fluids, matter fluids, radiation. Yes, there are parameters that go into this code. This is the lambda CDM model. So this is a small cosmological coordinate with cold dark matter. So there on the, you can add as many parameters as you want. The minimum is sort of 7, right? But
how many of those parameters cannot be determined by other experiments?
How many parameters cannot be?
To what extent is the fact that this is?
There are a number of other experiments that, for instance, the expansion rate of the universe, the Hubble constant, you can also try to measure with standard candles. The cosmological constant you can measure with supernova experiments. So there are various correlations that people measure. People will, the standard way to do it in cosmology actually is to indeed fit all 7 parameters independently in this one fitting function, and then compare it to a completely separate experiment which uses different tools and see that they match. This is what I learned from sitting in a room with cosmologists, is that people are very reluctant actually to use as input in these parameter calculations already known values for the cosmological constant or like that.
What kind of physics did Berman build their own?
Okay, that's the big question. Okay, that's a very good question, because that's what we're going to come to now. Yes.
What does 0 bar and 1 for self-axis?
Okay, so this actually is in units of small h inverse megaparsecs. So the Hubble constant, which is not precisely constant, is 100 times h, and then in the appropriate units, megaparsecs. There's some other parts which I do not know off the top of my head. But this is the small h is roughly 0.7. I can look it up precisely for you. I didn't want to go into too much detail, because the main question is the question which was just asked: what determines delta rho over rho? So the Harrison-Seldovich guess, which is that NS is roughly 0, is a phenomenological guess, which is based on the simple following observation that if the fluctuations become larger than 1, you are in trouble. And you get explicit trouble if this happens at the high end of your K-modes. You get excessive black hole production, and you will never have a matter-dominated era in your cosmology. If this happens at the low end, you have very excessive temperature fluctuations in your CMB, which is something we don't see. So that is where it comes from. Now I want to make one note right away before I go on. Because this is for a field theorist, and many of the string theorists have field theory intuition, there's something funny going on here. Note that the CMB, which is sort of the things that we measure that happened, earliest possible things in the cosmology that we measured, corresponds to relatively small scales. So early times, for a cosmologist, corresponds to very large scales. K, the momenta, is very, very low. Whereas late times corresponds to small scales. So as a Lorentz invariant field theorist, you usually think of times and scales as being the same thing. So small scales also means small time scales. And for a cosmologist, actually thinks the other way around. And this is a rather fundamental issue in cosmology, which we'll see comes up again and again, you have to be very careful with your intuition about where sort of small-scale or quantum gravity effects enter in cosmology. You expect them precisely to end to not come in at small scales, but at very early time measurements, and therefore at large scales of cosmology. So the main question is to explain this delta rho of rho, and that's the area I will focus on. The transfer functions, no, the to first order actually, yes, the transfer functions will certainly depend on k. Because the power spectrum Harrison-Phillips-Seldovich is completely flat k independent, and at the end of the day you get some curve point like this, and for instance this peak is determined somewhere where the recombination happens, etc., etc. So there's all kinds of physics that goes into that, which is k dependent, or in this case time dependent, when in the cosmic evolution something happened. Yes.
How should one understand this graph where the function, the temperature as a function of k matches exactly to the mass at a different range of scale? This is what you.
So this is one of the successes of modern cosmology. This is what is the cosmological story behind this? Is that there are small perturbations in the very early universe. Those small perturbations you can already see in the cosmic microwave background, those very small fluctuations in the temperature. As the cosmology evolves, right, gravity is attractive. So any small perturbation that you have will attract another small perturbation. Those perturbations grow. And they then eventually, the hypothesis is that this is then what eventually becomes the stars and the galaxies and the clusters of galaxies. And the fact that that you don't have to add any additional normalization factors between the observed structure formation of galaxies and the temperature fluctuations in the CMB, indeed is very strong support for that story, that it is precisely, you already see the seeds of structure in the temperature and isotropies of the CMB. So that's what this story is trying to tell you. So that's a big, in some sense, a success for the standard picture of structure formation in cosmology. So the question is how to compute this what's called the primordial power spectrum, d rho over rho. And in standard cosmology, standard Big Bang cosmology, which does not contain a period of inflation yet, this is just, you have an area of matter domination preceded by an area of radiation domination. This power spectrum comes out of nowhere. It is an ansatz, roughly speaking, based on the phenomenological arguments by Harrison and Seldovich, that it should be nearly scale invariant, and that should be roughly zero. And then it apparently you use that as input, and apparently everything works. All the physics of cosmology sits in this transfer functions, but d rho is input. And in standard Big Bang cosmology, it is some kind of completion that you have to put at the very beginning before your radiation dominated phase, at where the cosmology becomes singular, or in other words, where quantum gravity becomes important, that determines what this delta rho of rho is. And one of the reasons why I started a little bit slower and wanted to mention this is because Sergei Gukov gave a talk last week where he computed a power spectrum using a Hawking-Hortle-like wave function based on flux compactification Calabi-Yau's. But the scenario where he was working in was this scenario. So he was computing delta rho over rho, but there was no period of inflation where you'll see delta rho over rho comes out as a classical, semi-classical computation. So the standard cosmology has a number of problems. One of them is indeed, where does this delta rho over rho come from? And then there are several others. Why is the spatial universe that we observe relatively flat, and then we expect far more relic densities of exotic monopoles, etc., that we see. But the main one that I will emphasize here is so-called the horizon problem, or in simpler terms, why is the universe so homogeneous? If we look at the North Pole or the South Pole, if you didn't know what the stellar constellations were, you would think that they would look very much the same. And, well, if the physics that underlies the formation of stars, etc., is causally connected in some past, you could explain that. The problem is that if we measure the age of the universe, as we can see it by just running the dynamics backward, the universe is not old enough to explain why the North Pole and the South Pole could have been created by the same physical process. So this is the horizon problem. And all of these problems are, in standard cosmology, are usually lumped into the same thing. Well, since we the classical general relativity ends before we can address any of these problems, some kind of quantum gravity must resolve this issue. So in standard cosmology, actually, there are lots of areas where quantum gravity or string theory could give you an explanation. That is, if that is the story. As many of you know, the standard picture held by most cosmologies is no longer that of standard cosmology. There is a an addition to this story, which is inflationary cosmologies. And what is the main point of inflation is that it solves some of these problems within classical general relativity. Okay. So inflation, is simply that before the area of radiation domination, there was an era of De Sitter-like accelerated expansion. And the simplest way to write some theory like that down is you take standard general relativity, and if you add a scalar field plus some potential, where the minimum of the potential, V at the minimum of phi is larger than zero, this acts like a cosmological constant, then that the cosmology of this combined gravitational matter system will undergo and will have accelerated expansion. And this accelerated expansion within classical relativity means that the universe grows far more rapid than you would naively expect. And this is precisely how it can explain the horizon problem. If you go into details, if this era lasted long enough, if this era, right, if the inflationary era was longer than 60 eVs, or the universe grew at least e to the 60 during the inflationary time. It also solved the flatness problem and the relic density problem. I'm not going to go into all the details, but actually the main success of inflation is that it explains where this d rho over rho comes from. One of the more interesting aspects of all these De Sitter-like accelerated phases is that they have cosmic horizons, cosmological horizons. And as we know, when there are horizons in the game, there are analogs of Hawking, like radiation. And it's precisely this Hawking-like radiation that is the origin of this in the gravitational sector, whose power spectrum will create the seeds of structure that you then measure in the CMB, that then explains the temperature variations in the CMB and the matter distribution of galaxies. So what Hawking radiation, of course, is simply spontaneous pair creation from the vacuum. So this is not completely classical. This is, of course, semi-classical. But it gives, with the small addition of the semi-classical spontaneous pair creation of the vacuum, it solves four of the main problems that standard cosmology has in one, with one small addition to the story. And this is why people believe in inflation. Right? You can add many more things to your cosmologies, of course, but you can add an explanation for each one of these separately. There are many, many ways you can cook up your theory to do whatever you want. The point is that here you add just one thing and you explain four problems. This is the reason why people believe in inflation. And in particular, if you have a pure this I should have written here, this is the source of d rho over rho. And in particular, in pure de Sitter space, you find that d rho over rho is a constant h over 2 pi, right, which is the Harrison-Seldovich scale invariant spectrum. So in some sense, this is now actually for the question that we try to answer, can cosmology have some signatures of string theory of quantum gravity? This is rather bad news. We have explained many of the problems that standard cosmology had, which standard cosmology appealed to quantum gravity for the answer for, in terms of classical or almost classical general relativity.
Can you compute in these models what these transverse functions are? Because the rho doesn't give you experimental access.
So the transfer functions are all based on late time cosmology, after the period of inflation, so in the radiation dominated phase.
So you're saying you can compute these functions just using classical GR?
It's classical GR plus linear perturbation theory. Classical linear perturbation theory, as far as I understand.
So if there's any string theory effects or whatever quantum gravity effects, it will all be encoded in delta rho over rho, not in the transfer functions?
That is the main, as far as I understand cosmology, that is indeed correct. Yes.
That's a post Big Bang scenario. So the post Big Bang is only strings that develop.
Yes. Okay. I mean, of course, you know, when if quantum gravity has effects always, it's just that for these transfer functions, you can show that the effects will really be negligible. The primary effects will sit presumably in this seed function, the other rho over rho.
So the transfer function depends on the total energy transfer.
The transfer function, it depends on a lot of things. Okay. It depends on whether there's a cosmological constant or not, whether the dark matter is hot or cold, relative baryon, the relative fraction of baryons to other matter, all kinds of. As far as I know, the minimal input is about 7 parameters, and sort of you can increase. If you have dark energy, you have time varying cosmological constant, if you can call it in an abusive language, then you have even more parameters. So. But that's all late-time cosmology with standard classical relativity, and it should apply. Standard classical general relativity should apply in that era. Okay, so you see also that one of the things that inflation does, it gives exact amplitudes for this power spectrum. So this delta rho over rho actually usually is called the the scalar power spectrum. To be very precise, it's the square root of the scalar power spectrum, which is the square root of h squared over m Planck squared. And then there's a quantity epsilon, which I'll explain in a moment. But in addition to the scalar fluctuations, which comes from this effective scalar degree of freedom, there are also primordial gravitational waves. These will come up later in the story, who have its own power spectrum, which is just h squared over m Planck squared. Now, the point why I mentioned this is the following interesting observation, is that the amplitude of these power fluctuations, delta rho over rho, from the that you find is about the root of 10 to the minus 5. This is typically the size of these anisotropies that you measure. And that tells you, if you assume that epsilon, this quantity epsilon, which I'll explain in a moment, is not too far away from 1, that h, and this is of course the Hubble constant during the range of inflation, is around 10 to the minus 3 m Planck. Now, to string theorists, this should ring a bell, because the string scale in standard, pre-M theory duality revolution physics, when you just took a small heterotic string on a Calabi-Yau compactification, the string scale is about 10 to the minus 3, 10 to the minus 2 M Planck. So the scale of inflation, the background curvature that this inflationary phase has in these simple models, is roughly of the order of the string scale. Well, that actually should then make you excited again, that even though you have solved everything in classical relativity, the curvature that is involved in this inflationary phase is relatively high. So the corrections to classical general relativity could be significant. They could be on the order of 1 or 2 or 3%, because the curvature is relatively high. So this means that the Ricci scale over M Planck squared, right, is of the order of percents. So even though we've solved everything in classical general relativity, even inflation there is immediately, just from the size of the anisotropies that you measure, there, we see that there may still be a chance of finding some string theory effects as subleading corrections to the primary story. Okay. So what is this quantity epsilon? Okay. So remember that we needed to avoid that this delta rho over rho became too large. And for that, what you need is that this is the quantity epsilon. It's the first derivative of the potential divided by the potential squared. Has to be less than 1. And also, you need that the second derivative of the potential over the potential has to be less than 1. And these are known as the so-called slow roll conditions for inflation. So, good question. They should be in the order of a hundredth. So is a hundredth much, much less than 1, or is it less than 1? I'm just going to say less than 1. Okay. However, if you now interpret these slow roll conditions in terms of the action, it actually means that this action must be highly fine-tuned. So here we see a second opportunity in inflationary cosmologies. If fine-tuned actions we do not like as field theorists, there's nothing wrong with them, but we do not like them. We always like to explain why there are very small numbers in the game. So if there's a way that quantum gravity or string theory may explain fine-tuned action, there's a second way in which string theory or quantum gravity can tell you something about inflation. Although, in some sense, this would not be a direct observation of the theory. Now, inflation itself is very successful, but it still has some problems. And I should not have erased that. The inflationary phase is a phase you glue on before.
Question.
Yes. Yes. Very good question. That was where one of the problems I was going to list. Okay. But let me first give you. I was going to do it in order because that was going to be my main point. So the problem is still that this is an inflationary cosmology is a phase that you glue on pre the radiation dominated phase of the standard cosmology, but at some point you still run into the singularity problem. Right, so there still is an initial state issue, which it has ameliorated tremendously compared to the standard Big Bang cosmology, but it has not completely resolved it. The second is, of course, what everybody asks, what is the inflaton? Especially as a particle physics, we don't see any of these very light, fine-tuned scalar fields. Where does this guy come from? A third problem is that actually inflation needs this tremendous number of this tremendous growth factor to explain the horizon problem. But this growth factor also means that there are massive redshifts in the game. Remember, e to the 60 is roughly 10 to the minus 20. Right? So you can easily get to very, very high scales from something that's a small scale at the end of inflation. And you have to seriously worry whether in some sector that you're not ignoring, that you're running beyond the range of validity of classical general relativity. So in a sense that this was the background Ricci scalar over M Planck squared being of order 1%, these massive redshifts you can think of as that the derivatives in the action over some cutoff scale become of order 1. In the normal way that you have an effective action where you do expansions, you have expansion in the background values over the cutoff scale, but also over the momentum over the cutoff scale. So this is just translating some of the problems of cosmology in field theory language. And then there's the question that Nathan just raised. The spontaneous pair creation from the vacuum is a semi-classical effect. It's quantum mechanics. But quantum field theory in curved space-times, in particular in cosmological space-times, is not very well understood. So there are secretly some assumptions that still go into the computation of this power spectrum of this delta rho over rho, and that's what I will be spending a large part of the remainder of the talk on, outlining what those assumptions are and how quantum field theory can actually show you precisely what the corrections are that are still employed here that are not always realized. The most important one is what's called the cosmological vacuum ambiguity. So all these problems, of course, are then questions again where quantum gravity may have something to say, and where string theory hopefully can provide an answer. So this is where the opportunities remain in inflationary cosmology to explain something about cosmological data. Do so. So there's one final point that I should say before I go into some details about the computation of this delta rho over rho, is that if you really want to see some effects of quantum gravity or string theory in data, you have to make sure, of course, that it jumps out of the data, that it's not sunk within the uncertainties that are always involved in the measurement. And the point is, in the cosmology, there is a very special type of uncertainty, which is the cosmologists themselves have dubbed cosmic variance. And basically what this means is that we have one universe, we can do one measurement, and therefore you cannot reduce your statistics by repeating your experiment over and over and over again. So there's a simple statistics limited uncertainty in anything you measure in cosmology, and you have to make sure that whatever effect you want to see overcomes this statistical uncertainty. So if you look, for instance, at these at the CMB data itself, which is usually plotted in multiple moments CL, it's a graph which looks something like this. You will all have seen it. And this peak is around L is 200. At the low end, there are rather large error bars. These errors are of order 1 over the square root of L. And this is precisely this cosmic variance bound that you are trying to deal with. In fact, the current data is so good that these error bars are completely made up out of this statistical error, and there's no experimental error in it. So there's no experiment that we will ever do in the future that will get better than these error bars. At the high end, of course, here you will see the error bars grow again. This is experiment limited, and future experiments will get better and better and better. In effect, this is simply part of that power spectrum that I drew earlier. If you glue it all the way to the end here, you can get to very, very small errors. A lot of the early discussions of whether there are string theory or quantum gravity signatures in cosmology only focused on the CMB, and while I was very much worried because in the CMB this effect is very, very large, so the error, right, the statistical error is of order 1% in the CMB. So in order to see an effect of quantum gravity beyond sort of the normal standard story, you had to find corrections to the standard story which were at least of order 1%. Now that's a pretty tall order. Even though I will show you in a moment that they conceivably could be there. When you combine the CMB power spectrum with the large-scale structure surveys and actually assume that this story of structure formation is indeed correct, that the seeds of structure are all created by this uniform mechanism, then you can get this error down to much, much lower. So if you combine with large-scale structure, then you can get the error down to 10 to the minus 6. So this was a great surprise to many of us who worked in the field. This was David Spergel told us this in the one-day workshop that we had in Colombia in May, that he believes he can get it down to as low as that. That, of course, would be fantastic because it means that the range of opportunity to see something is much, much larger. Okay, so this was my brief overview of the cosmological observables and data story and what you are measuring and what you have to worry about when you're measuring. And then now I will proceed to some explanations of this d rho over rho and the corrections to it and which may be measurable. But before I do that, let me pause for questions. How am I doing on time? Okay, so I have...
This is a natural place to take a break.
This actually would be a very natural place to take a break. It's maybe a little bit earlier than I thought, but then I'll just go a little bit longer at the...
Well, we'll take a break to about 11.
Okay.